Okay.
Would you like me to count you down?
Would you please?
How about I count you up?
Okay, well, how far are we going to go? Because I'm not waiting until you get to 100.
Well, we can do it in Spanish. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco.
Welcome back. It is episode 37. This is Android Buffet. I am Jerry, and I am joined, as usual, as always, by my cohort, my co-host, my compadre in crime, Guru. How are you today?
I'm a little tired. I'm sitting in my living room, which I'm continuing to reconstruct. I just realized that I am sitting next to a television antenna. Did you know people still have these things?
Yes, I have two of them.
Well, this one is one that's designed to be mounted outside on a pole, but it is sitting next to my desk.
I have one of those up in my attic.
Oh, you have an attic. Okay, that's...
Yes, I live in a house.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
I have a garage as well. I don't have a basement, though.
I don't have one either. I'm on the ground floor, but there's a nice concrete slab under my feet.
You know, we don't do basements down here in Florida.
Why not?
They tend to pop out of the ground when it floods.
I've been in that situation. I do not have a basement, but I have been in a basement. So we do have them in New York.
Yes, just well, not, I imagine.
Just not in this building. If you drilled down under here, you'd probably get a sewer.
Or some old subway station that's been sealed off and is now the hiding place for spirits and evil slime of all natures.
No, that was a ripoff of Beach's pneumatic tunnel, which may or may not still exist. It was actually the project of Alfred Eli Beach, who was the at one time the editor of Scientific American. He actually applied for a permit to build a pneumatic mail tube. And he just changed the size specification so that he could build a demonstration pneumatic subway line. And he did so...
That's quite a change in the specification. We're talking from going from, what, 6 inches to 12 feet?
Pretty much.
It's just a spec change.
Well, he actually had the tunnel dug out by a couple of cohorts out of a basement of a building. Now, that was on Broadway, not far from the building that... Speaking of Ghostbusters, that the firehouse that was used in that movie. And the tunnel may or may not still be there. There's some discrepancy. Some people say that in 1912, when they were constructing the City Hall station on the BMT line, which is now the NR, that the station was exposed and demolished. And many people say that that is not true, that the articles of the time do not reflect that. And the tunnel may actually still be there. It wasn't that big a tunnel, so it's really anyone's guess. But if you happen to want to go down to Broadway and dig into the street between Warren and Murray Streets, you're welcome to do so. But that's
you don't have to get a permit or anything?
Well, I don't think they give you one. But the closest real-life analog that definitely is there is the City Hall station that was the flagship of the IRT, which was the original New York subway that was opened in 1904. Now, that abandoned station, which has been abandoned since 1945, I actually have been in. Trains still use the station. They don't use the platform, but the loop that the station is in. The trains come in and then they loop around and go back uptown. The loop is still used for trains turning around going uptown. So I've stayed on the train and gone through, and during a tour a few years ago, I actually got off and explored the platform.
Interesting.
It was an endorsed tour. So I was not illegally trespassing in any part of New York City.
Well, that just takes all the fun out of it.
Well, I did once technically trespass into an abandoned elevated tunnel. It's interesting. The tunnel is underground, but it was part of an elevated train. So the tunnel was closed in 1958. Unfortunately, I could not be considered trespassing as no one can agree who actually owns the tunnel anymore. If they ever actually agree who owns the tunnel, I probably was trespassing.
Well, I don't know how it is in New York, but... Here in Jacksonville, if you own a block of land,
yes,
you own the earth underneath and the air above that block of land.
But what if a tunnel is constructed, let's say, by the municipality, such as a subway?
If it goes underneath your land, they have to pay you for it.
Yes, but then you'd own the rights in perpetuity. Now, what would happen if that tunnel was abandoned? Would the rights revert to you? or would the rights remain in limbo? Now, the organization that originally owned the tunnel no longer exists. There are several successor organizations. So is the tunnel owned by the city, or is the tunnel owned by the Transit Authority, which is a state agency which took over the various lines which were once private?
I would argue it belongs to the people who live upstairs.
Okay, so essentially I trespassed on many different people's property.
I don't know how it would work in, like, okay, if you got an apartment building or a condo building.
Yes.
Okay, who owns the building?
Usually, in most cases, management companies. Not always, but...
The management company would own that section of the tunnel.
Yes, so I essentially violated the sovereignty of many different management
companies. Well, let's not go crazy. It's not sovereign.
Yes. Well, down there, it looks like it. Anyway, I'm probably not going to go down there again. It's one of those things you do once in a lifetime. This was the abandoned Polo Ground shuttle, which once took people between Yankee Stadium, or that area, and the old Polo Grounds, connecting up to the 9th Avenue Elevated, which ran down to the bottom of Manhattan. The Polo Grounds were, of course, where the New York Giants played before they fled New York and went somewhere else. And then the Mets actually played there until Shea Stadium was available, which has also subsequently been knocked down.
You know, I don't even have the background to understand most of what you're saying.
Have you ever heard of the New York Giants?
Football team.
The baseball team.
No.
They moved to California.
Sounds like a wise choice.
Then there was this team called the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Nope.
They were in Brooklyn, and now they're not.
Okay.
Okay. Essentially, some baseball teams left New York.
Is that a bad thing?
Depends on your opinion. If you're a New Yorker, probably.
Or a baseball fan?
Well, I've told people that I refuse to follow baseball in New York City because I haven't forgiven the Dodgers from leaving. This is notwithstanding the fact that they left many decades before either of us were born, but I still haven't forgiven them for it. Anyway, jokes aside, I hope everybody enjoyed my little New York history lesson. I do love local history. I could talk about the history of Florida if you want.
No.
Yes. Next time we'll cover the overseas highway.
I have a flying bathtub topic.
Okay, well, I'm...
You remember we were talking about the Black Widowers?
Yes.
Okay, so apparently there are 5 books. Yes. And there's technically a 6th book that is a bunch of reprints.
And a couple of original stories, including, I believe, one with Harlan Ellison.
Yeah. The reviews of the 6th book say that the unpublished stories...
Yes.
...pretty much were unpublished for a reason.
I won't disagree. I've read the 6th book. I've read them all, actually, but not recently. But
The only time that I've read them was when I was growing up and my dad had them, so I don't have the books.
Can you call them?
I found them online, and I ordered the first 4 books, Tales of the Black Widowers, More Tales of the Black Widowers, Casebook of the Black Widowers, and Banquets of the Black Widowers for $22.
Was this Amazon Marketplace, AV, who?
Thriftbooks.com.
Okay.
I started out on Amazon, and some of them I could get cheaper. It would be like, you know, $1.99 plus $4 in shipping. But some of them were excessively expensive, whereas Thriftbooks had the first 4 for reasonable prices. So I ordered them.
Well, tell me when they get there. We can discuss the Cross of Lorraine.
I remember that one. That was the...
You're not going to spoil it for all the listeners.
Where the lady got off the bus.
Yes, but you're not going to spoil where the Cross of Lorraine was. You don't want to spoil it for the listeners.
I don't remember that much detail.
Oh, I do.
Oh, right! The gas station.
See, you spoiled it for them.
Now I remember. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, sorry, folks. You just got the answer to the mystery.
I'm sorry, but there is a statute of limitation on spoilers. You know, with TV shows and such, I think it's like a week. With books, it's probably, you know, okay, maybe let's go 6 months from from paperback publication.
Okay, so the statute of limitations expired when Asimov died, gone. At the very least.
So, for those of you interested, I mean, this is kind of representative of what the Black Widowers were, right? This guy is on a bus. And this lady helps him out in some way, form, or fashion. Doesn't really matter. It's irrelevant to the story. And he wants to say thank you, but pay her back, express his gratitude, whatever. But she got off the bus when he was asleep, so he doesn't know where she was, where she is. Well, he's talking to one of the girls that was on the bus,
It was a
and
little boy.
it was a little boy.
I thought it was a little boy. It was a little boy or a little girl. I thought it was a little boy.
Irrelevant, small child. And the child says that she got off at the
The place with the sign of the Cross of Lorraine.
right. And he goes up and down and the entire route to the bus and cannot find a single Church of Saint Lorraine. And so he's at the Black Widowers and blah blah blah. And at the end, when all of everybody is just flustered and has no idea, the Henry pops up and says, "Excuse me, sir, but was there an how many exons were there along the route?" And he's, just a handful. It's like, you should start there. Because the Cross of Lorraine, if you don't know, which I didn't, basically looks like a cross, but it has two crossbars.
Yes.
Well, the X is an exon, if you they if it looks like.
If you're looking at it on an angle.
Yep.
And you gotta love Henry. At the end,
Oh yeah.
the waiter always solves the mystery, and he claims, quite
That
humbly.
everybody else just narrowed it down for him. Yep.
And remember
That is
what?
an actually that's an excellently representative example of what the Black Widowers are.
Yes, and
That type of.
if you read what Asimov himself said on the subject. He said that, if he continued to write the series, and this was, of course, before he passed away, that the Black Widowers would always be basically the same ages, and nothing would change about the story. He wouldn't have the characters change and new Black Widowers appear. That he always intended to, no matter what, have the same characters.
Something that I found interesting while I was looking, I did not know how many books there were or what books there were. So, of course, Wikipedia to the rescuer, what
Yes.
rescue. And I did not know that the Black Widowers themselves were based on real people.
Yeah, there was essentially a group that Asimov was a part of, which was a monthly banquet. I believe it was the Trapdoor Spiders. Was
I think that sounds familiar, but maybe because you told that to me at the time.
it? Yeah, I'm just going from memory. It's been a few years. But basically, they were based on people. And in fact, a few of the people they were based on, if you look at his notations and his forewords on some of the stories, he implies who it is each of the characters were loosely based on.
Right, in Wikipedia, there's a list of who each character was based on.
And it's a very loose basing. It's just more inspired by.
Yep. So, have we done enough flying? Shall we get on
Well,
to the Android?
we should actually say, when are we going to be launching our first Flying Bathtubs episode? Because I've already set up a Flying Bathtubs Twitter account before somebody grabs it, and I will be at some point putting up a site. Well, you don't want anybody else to get the idea and steal the Flying Bathtubs out from under you.
I tell you what, we have, or I have a wedding to go to in Ecuador in a month,
Okay.
and I'll be gone. So that means I won't be around for an episode because, while
Do you want me to find a temp? You want me to, let's say, ask Josh Pollard to fill in for you or something?
if you want to,
Okay. Or should we skip a week?
no, dude. If you find that I am superfluous to this show, then by all means, carry
Wait.
on without me.
I don't think you're superfluous to the show. I just want to know if the show should go on, or if we shouldn't try to do a show in your absence. Or I could find somebody to interview. What week? This is a week after next, you said?
No, it's late in April.
Late in April. Okay, I think that's when my vacation is, so maybe I'll see who I can dig up. I'm not really going anywhere. I'm actually hanging out.
Actually, I will not be available the first Monday in May.
Okay, the first Monday in May I'll be back from my vacation. The second to last week in April I'm going away, but I'm not going so far. I'm going to hang out with my relatives, which I do every April for a few days.
I will be in Ecuador, so I cannot,
Podcasting.
I'm expecting
Well,
poor internet.
maybe being as my mother is an Android user, maybe since she'll be around, maybe I should draft her for a special, a mother and son episode for buffet. That would be really bizarre.
Hey, why not?
I'll see what I can dig up. I may not do a full episode in your absence, but I may try to at least put something together.
All right, well. Hey, if you're listening to this, meaning you're a fan, you're a listener, you're a subscriber, you're, hey, our audience, then by all means, if you have an opinion, chime in. Am I superfluous to the show?
I don't think you're superfluous, but in your absence, we could muddle through. poorly. In fact, I think we should muddle through just so people can see how the show suffers in your absence. But when do you want to have the first Flying Bathtubs episode?
I was thinking after I got back from that.
Okay. In the meantime,
Until then, the schedule's kind of full.
Okay. On an unrelated note, before I forget, I have set up a tip page on the Android Buffet site based on people's feedback saying they wanted one.
All right.
So if you are interested, I've set up two different options for your tip, and there's a third option that I've considered. You may donate using PayPal, should you wish to. Or there's a link, you can send us an Amazon gift card, or two, one for me and one for Jerry, in whatever denomination you wish. And of course, you can use the email address podcast@androidbuffet.com to send those gift cards. And if you click on the link on the site, we also get a commission from the nice people at Amazon for selling you the gift card. So we get it on both ends.
Holy cow. Okay. Squirrel.
Yes.
So I went to Google I used Chrome. So I went into the task or the bar and I typed in www.androidbuff.com. And then I saw it in the list, so I hit enter, but I didn't hit the down arrow. So it ended up doing a Google search for Android Buff. And then it asked me if I meant AndroidBuffet.com, and I said, yes, I did. And the first result is Android Buffet, hungry for Android, get all you can eat at the. And underneath it, it says Molson FL shared this on Twitter back in July of last year.
Really? We're going to have to ask him to share it again.
What want to see which results your friends are talking about? Are you Jerry Jones? Yes, this is me or no, with little buttons.
Are you?
I am.
Really? I learned something.
Yes, on Twitter, I'm Jerry_Jones.
Yes, I just haven't seen you there in a while. I know you've been.
I haven't been on there. I'm a lurker now.
Yes.
And I really don't know how to get back on there and say, "Hi, I'm back."
How about like that? Hi, I'm back.
I was thinking of doing now that. The C++ OX final draft has been approved, so it's actually going to be C++ 11 or C++ OB. I don't know what they're going to call it, but C++ 2011 has Lambdas in it, so I thought I would, do it like a Hello World in a Lambda. That would be cool.
I will look for it as I follow you on Twitter.
All right. Okay. So, what are we talking about? Speaking of Android.
I was just saying that you can donate to us or send us an Amazon gift card for us to play with.
Oh.
And
I know. That's why I was searching. I wanted to see what it looked like.
And one other thing that you have to keep in mind. If you are interested and think that it is a good idea for us to put a PayPal subscription button there, what do you feel is a reasonable amount to subscribe to the show so that you can set it and forget it and give us a certain amount per few months? We'd love your feedback on what if you want us to set up a recurring subscription system where you could subscribe, of course you would get nothing other than our gratitude. And if you do so, we would of course read your name on the air, so to speak, and tell everyone how wonderful you are. Remember, our gratitude comes cheap, but that doesn't mean you can't give us more money.
Oh my.
And if you don't want to give anything, that's fine. Remember, we're not asking for money. We're just saying, as per the suggestion we were given, if you'd like to appreciate us, we like to be appreciated. You can, of course, continue to appreciate us for free by emailing us, using the contact form, sending us a voicemail, and whatever other type of appreciation you wish to convey to us. We live on your adoration. And now let's move into the Android-based information.
Yeah.
Google is keeping Honeycomb closed source for the foreseeable future.
Before we started this podcast, I thought about, should we sit and talk about this for a minute? Because this concerns me.
I think it concerns a lot of us. Because it's supposedly an open source project, but Google gets to decide when the code drops.
Well, there is a provision in the GPL, the most draconian of open source licenses, that says, basically, you don't have to release your modifications and source code immediately. You can hold on to it until you can get it cleaned up some.
Which technically makes sense.
Yes.
That you release when it's finished. You don't necessarily have to release when you're still working on it.
Right. Or, you get something working and you release the binary but you want some time to kind of clean up the codes and add comments, refactor so that it's more understandable. The GPL allows for such delays. But that's not what they're saying. They're saying, I don't think we're going to release the Honeycomb source code at all.
Well, they're saying they might jump just to releasing the next source code.
Right. Our next release will probably be ice cream or whatever. Have they even officially said it's going to be ice cream?
They've implied it, but they've never said it. What other interesting eyes are there in dessert items?
I have no idea.
I still haven't forgiven them
But
for the halva.
what do you think this means? Motorola came out and said that it concerns them and that they are likely to. I mean, Motorola has had a hard on for Android for a while now, right?
But they've been talking about, if you look at the news, creating some sort of other operating system of their own.
Right. And if they have their own operating system, then these awesome phones like the Droid X and such are probably going to stop coming from Motorola,
I guess I'll
which
have to buy an HTC phone.
or a Samsung or an LG.
I haven't seen much from
And even
LG lately.
HTC has shown grumblings because HTC needs the source code to Honeycomb because their modifications are fairly intrusive, right?
Which is a whole other issue.
Well, yes, it is. But now they're getting the cold shoulder from Google. I mean, am I understanding this right?
Well, essentially, although Google is sharing the Honeycomb source with some of their preferred partners.
And one would hope that HTC is a preferred partner.
Well, as much as Google seems to play the field, if there's a better way of putting it, with the various manufacturers, they still
Although I
have
have
partners.
read that anyone can get the source code to Honeycomb just by asking.
Well, wonder why Cyanogen doesn't have it then.
Yeah.
But I'd imagine
Well,
they wouldn't be
there's a
allowed
couple of
to.
options. One, has he asked? And the other is maybe what I read was completely off base.
Well, he'd be if Cyanogen and the Cyanogen mod staff had the source code, they'd open source it. So maybe that's
Right.
why they would not get a successful release of it.
Maybe I was thinking, when there have been multiple articles on this, right? Some are pro, yo, I understand what Google's doing. Others are, whoa, Android's dead.
I don't think
I
it's
think the
dead.
reality's probably somewhere in the middle.
I don't think it's dead. I just think it's a combination of factors. They rushed Honeycomb out. It wasn't ready. Look at how, many problems they're having with Honeycomb. And now instead of opening it up to the community and the community could work on it with them, which is the problem Google's always had with things, they essentially have always supported open source, at least for the last few years, but they
No,
haven't.
they have always open sourced. They have always released. They have always, not always, there. It is common for Google to release the source code of things that they do.
Yes, but they've never worked upstream with an open source community.
Right. They rarely, if ever, take in patches from the community.
And I think that's a problem because that it isn't truly an open source project. It's more a project that has been open sourced than an open source
Or it's a
project.
project where the source is shared.
Yeah, which is, in my opinion, something of a problem. If you look, just moving down to.
Well, no, let's be clear. It's not a problem that they share the source.
No, I think it's a problem that they don't participate in the process.
Well, I think that's their right, but I think it's misleading to call it open source if by open source there is an implied two-way conversation with community developers.
Yes, but if you look at, I put a story on here about CyanogenMod, they're adding in a patch that may allow users to revoke specific application privileges. And I don't know if this is going to go through. But basically, they would patch the operating system so anybody, once they granted permissions to an application, could subsequently revoke them.
Okay.
Which is sort of an interesting thought. It's something that stock Android would not do.
Well, I
But.
have seen some developers asking for what are essentially optional permissions. Things that are, you know what, if you let us access this information, we can provide you a better experience. But if you don't want to, that's okay. For example, you could have an application that can get, I don't know, backgrounds from the internet, you know, a wallpaper management software. It could get extra images from the internet, but it doesn't have to. It could just work with what you have on the phone. So the internet access permission would be optional. You could permit it or not at the operating system level. It's something that has been desired by some developers. And I think that's a good way of doing it. The HTC way of just saying, yeah, no, you can't do that. Of just revoking permissions is, I just think, horrible.
Well, there is something on Linux that I'm going to use as an example that's popular in my distribution, Fedora, which is SE Linux, which was an NSA sponsored initiative.
Right.
The whole idea is that you have user roles in addition to traditional permissions, which more clearly define what an application can do within the confines of the system and what it can access.
Okay.
So maybe there needs to be more complexity in what an application is allowed to do on Android, so that it can't essentially more clearly define the box. And you know, that's going to be a pain in the neck for developers though. But the question
Yeah,
is, how do you define the box?
I believe what you're talking about is it's called claims-based authorization versus identity-based authorization.
I thought it was roles-based.
Roles-based.
So essentially you define a role for that particular application, and that role defines what the application is allowed to do, such as
Yeah.
communicate on port 80. As an example, a web server would have permission to communicate on port 80, but unless you gave it permission, it would not have permission to communicate on port 8080.
Yeah, I would know. We're just talking about a nightmare. I mean, yeah, if you're a Linux weenie, then hi, Pat. That may be okay, but if you're, my parents trying to use their telephone, then specifying that an application can use port 80 but not 8080 or.
Well, I'm not saying going that far. There's a reason why security-enabled Linux or SE Linux was initiated by the NSA. They need a much higher level security than I do. And so do many corporations. I'm not a corporation. A lot of people choose to disable SE Linux because it can be a pain in the neck, although it's gotten significantly better over the years as they teach it more. What I'm saying is maybe the permissions have to be more granular. Maybe they do have to define it a bit more.
I agree that the permissions could be more granular. I like the idea of optional permissions. I do not like the idea of the operating system just yanking permissions.
Well, we also don't know. We know that they're talking about putting in a revocation system. That doesn't mean that we know how revocation will be done. It could be done if the system believes that any given application is taking more than its fair share of resources. And it may not be a permanent revocation. It may be, let's say you have a basically good application, depending on your point of view, that's constantly pinging a server and doesn't need to be.
How do you know it doesn't need to be?
That's the
How does the
question.
operating system know that it doesn't need to be?
That's the question.
Maybe it's a GPS tracking for parents so that they continually know where their child is.
Yes, but what I'm saying is that putting in the ability to revoke application privileges does not mean that the system will be created that will revoke permissions across the board. We haven't seen the other side of it, which is the monitoring system that monitors the privileges. It may
Well,
just it,
no.
it may be it may be part of a two-step consideration.
See, when you make an Android application, one of the things you say is, I need this, I need that, I need the other thing. I need a camera. I need a microphone. If you don't have a microphone, I don't work. So the application doesn't get installed. So the very fact that if you set up in your manifest, I need a microphone. If you are installed and running, then you can, in theory, depend on the fact that you have a microphone. Now, if the operating system just goes and willy-nilly yanks the microphone permission, then and the app now applications have to be modified so that they can handle anything at all failing. Now, by and large, that's not a bad way to be anyway. Defensive programming, especially when you're in a particularly hostile environment to program like Android is, It is a good thing, but it's not the norm, it's not the standard, and what you're going to end up with is applications that are crashing, that are freezing, that just go into these crazy CPU spin cycles. And you know who the user's going to blame? The application.
No, I'm agreeing with you on that. I think that
When
this
it
is.
was the phone that broke the contract.
What I'm saying is that I think this works only as part of a bigger system. And that's where the problem may come in if CyanogenMod accepts this proposed patch, that it's doing something significantly different than what mainstream Android is doing.
Well, see, now I think that's okay.
I think that's a problem for compatibility.
I think that if you're a Cyanogen user, you are probably more technical and are willing to accept the fact that if you revoke a permission, you are breaking it and not blame the application. I don't think it's okay for an operating system that comes directly from HTC or straight from the Android open source project or the official build from Google. I don't think it's okay for them to willy-nilly pull permissions.
No, I agree with you on that. As I said, I just think that the ability to revoke, I think, only works if there's a bigger revocation system that makes logical sense. So I haven't seen what they would possibly use the ability to revoke for. So I'm holding up judgment
Probably
on
the
that.
same thing as Android. You've got some malicious software on your compute on your phone. It is broadcasting. I mean, it's key login. It's broadcasting phone numbers, and it's grabbing passwords that you type into the browser, and it's broadcasting them out. And Cyanogen finds out about it, and Cyanogen wants the ability to revoke those.
Well, the question is, would that be the equivalent, let's say, of a security scanner or a firewall program that dynamically adjusts permission settings? Is that where it makes sense to go? Where it
I don't
monitors
think
for some.
so, and here's why. When it comes to a network, you have always got to assume failures at any point. That's just the very nature of using a network, is that it is unreliable. So even though you got the first part of a message, doesn't mean you're going to get the next part of the message. So you have to handle the network going up or down at any time. That's not the case with a hard drive. Now, hard drives can fail. But you know what? If the hard drive fails, the fact that your program just crashed is the last of the user's worries.
Good point.
The f microphones, they're either there or they're not. So I think the firewall is slightly different.
Well, I was using it as an example, but
Right.
some form of security software that layers on top of the ability to revoke privileges that monitors to see if something's abusing its privilege.
Maybe something on the hard drive that lets you write in one directory but not another?
That's
Would
true.
that be a better example?
Quite possibly. But I think I will just wait to see what happens.
It is interesting, and with the immaturity of Android, and I don't mean that Android is immature, I just mean that it is not a 20-year-old operating system that has gone through revisions and bug fixes and thousands and or hundreds of thousands of
Well, we have
revision
1.5,
cycles.
1.6, 2 point.
Right, but how long has Linux had to work out the security model?
It still hasn't, at
And
least in my
how
opinion.
and but how long has it had to work out the security model?
Well, if you go, back, it's been what since it's been at least, if you go back to Unix, and bear in mind this is all basically from Unix. Unix has
Right.
been around since the 70s.
So 40 years?
And some.
4-0, 4T. And the In the software technology computer sector, 40 years, I mean, is almost quite literally forever. So, an operating system that's been out for 2 or 3 years, yeah, they still have some growing to
But it's,
do.
it's not what it was. If you look, all the modern Linux distribution is built of so many individual project pieces that are, just to give you an example, just the startup procedure for a computer. Ubuntu uses something called Upstart. Fedora adopted Upstart for its startup procedures. Both of that replaced the traditional init scripts. And now Fedora in its next version is switching to a new thing called Systemd, which is loosely based on the boot system that Apple uses. Not in the case that any code is stolen, but it uses some of the same conventions. So then you have another system that Apple uses, all of which are based on a Unix-based ancestor, but they're all completely different systems, and that's just for booting up the computer. We haven't even gotten to systems for the graphical display and all these different divisions and all these projects to put the pieces together. They're all called Linux, though. That gets confusing.
Yep. But, well, yeah, KDE versus whatever.
GNOME or GNOME, depending on your... Then you have XFCE, you have Fluxbox. I can name a few more if you're really bored. But then you have the whole issue with Unity. Then you have the upcoming issue with replacing the X server, which has been the graphical display environment for Linux and Unix for years, with Wayland.
My main point is that trying out new stuff, especially in the security area, which is very important, is okay.
I will agree with that. But I think either way, it's very interesting. And I think I just want to see what they're thinking.
It is interesting.
I wonder if we can get somebody from there on.
I don't know. I'm very curious about this. Now, I think it's also important to note that what CyanogenMod is talking about is not the operating system deciding, but the install, or when you install it, the installer says, I need this permission, that permission, and I need 14 different permissions. And CyanogenMod is talking about having a dialogue where you can tell it, for this application, only give it this permission, that permission, and the other permission, and revoke the other 14 permissions.
Which should be interesting.
Yeah.
I just want to see how it would work in real life. If it would be useful for people, or people would never use it. And thus, why is it a patch?
I think that it should definitely have a warning on there that says, if you revoke any permissions, the application may not work.
Which is a warning that I would endorse. So shall we move on?
Sure. Since we're, what? Wow.
Yeah. We tend to ramble, but let's...
Okay, folks, just for, we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 things on the list to talk about today. We've done 2.
Okay, well, here's an interesting thought somebody expressed on Twitter. Dear Android, I don't want a back button. I want an up in the app hierarchy button. And I think that makes absolute perfect design sense.
No.
Isn't up better than back?
No. How would you express back when you're in the browser?
Most of the time you're not in a browser. You're in an app. Now, if you're saying that the button can't be used for back elsewhere, but I think people are not necessarily thinking about what back is. People think as back is going to the previous thing. But in an application, up makes much more sense. Now, would it not be the same button? Android is moving towards, if you look at what Honeycomb is, it's moving towards not actually having physical buttons, but having buttons on the screen that can be changed based on what you're doing. So in most applications, with the exception of a browser, you would want an up. You wouldn't want a back.
But what does up mean?
In a hierarchy?
Yeah.
It essentially means move to a higher level of abstraction or a lower level of abstraction. Essentially going from more specific to less specific. So okay. To another menu. Now,
and how did you get to that specific area?
So you're saying that you moved forward and thus you must move back.
Well... Not that it's a forward or backwards, but that you moved in a direction.
Yes.
And the back button means go back to where you were. And if you were higher in the hierarchy, then go back up the hierarchy.
I just think it's a perfect example of how we have to stop thinking about hardware buttons and start thinking about contextual buttons.
The buttons change based on usage. Yes.
And I think in some cases, up makes more sense than back. And you pointed out a great example where back makes more sense, which is in a browser where you're going to the previous screen.
Or you're going through a wizard.
But I think that moving forward, Honeycomb is already starting with this, and it makes much more sense to have the buttons in software and changeable based on what you're doing, rather than always having the same buttons at the bottom of your screen.
I can certainly agree with that, because there are some times when, for example, the search button just makes no friggin' sense.
Yeah, and people overload it, essentially. They use it for something
else. They overload
it,
or I accidentally hit it, so it brings up the Google search. I'm just, ah!
The only buttons
I absolutely would like for those buttons, I mean, on the Evo, they're already capacitive. So, I mean, it's not like I get the tactile feedback of pushing a button. But if there was just a little extra part of the screen, and those buttons changed according to where I was, that would be awesome.
I think that's where it's going. I think the only hardware buttons you need are your power button, maybe your volume controls.
Interesting tidbit. This annoys me about 14 times a day. On the Evo, if you press the power button and the down volume button at the same time,
Yes.
it puts your phone into vibrate.
That annoys me. I've seen phones that do that.
And the sad part is when I hold my phone and I click my end or my forefinger up to the top to push the button, that means my other three fingers are on one side, my thumb's on the other side, right?
Yes.
My thumb is right over the down button. So if I'm not particularly care, and I'm pushing down on the top. So I need to squeeze it a little bit so that it doesn't slide, right?
Yes.
So I routinely hit the down button and the power button at the same time. Super annoying.
I wonder if you can reprogram this in software.
Interesting that.
Write a little program that fixes it. Anyway, moving
Thought of that.
along,
Why hadn't I thought of that?
you're a programmer.
Okay, so basically, thought of the day, yes, I agree, make the buttons more context.
And that's where they're
And there
going.
may be times where an up and a back are appropriate. So if you have contextual buttons, you could have them both. But if he talks about getting rid of the back button and replacing it with an up button, I disagree.
I think it's just time to think about the whole concept of hardware buttons. That's why I really wanted to put it in. I think sometimes up is much more useful and much more common, but you're right, back is occasionally needed.
There are sometimes I really want a forward button.
Very good. And I think in some programs, having that customizable would be very helpful. Moving along, the BlackBerry Playbook will run Android apps using an optional player.
It's actually running a VM library that allows Android apps to run on just about anything,
Well, see, this is a way to ensure that when you launch your new platform that you have software for it.
which is important.
Yes, I just think it's an interesting decision. First,
Well,
BlackBerry
what's the
decide
other option? iPhone?
First, BlackBerry decides that they're going to make their Messenger software available for iOS and Android. Now they're saying that their new Playbook will not only run their applications natively, but they'll also have a compatibility layer for Android. I think it's an interesting direction for BlackBerry.
I think it's intelligent. It
I think they see
lets
they're
people
being
get their
challenged.
black book, get a playbook without worrying about, oh my God, there are no apps for it. And it lets people get into the BlackBerry messaging system without having to buy a BlackBerry.
Well,
And
actually, if I understand correctly, you still need a BlackBerry to use a BlackBerry Playbook. It's a paired device. It doesn't independently run email.
no, I'm pretty sure you do not need a BlackBerry to have a playbook.
Okay.
I'm almost completely certain.
Okay, I remember hearing that
There's a lot of confusion on that, I admit. And
there
as a matter of
was.
fact, I'm going to clear this right. Do I need, where is BlackBerry Playbook?
I gathered that the two devices were paired until they fully developed the software. And there was a whole big discussion I heard about this the other day on some other show. I don't really follow closely the dealings of BlackBerry as I don't have a BlackBerry device. Well, actually, RIM is the company.
I don't either, but I'm almost certain.
Okay, if anybody's heard anything to the contrary, feel free to write us. We always like to be corrected when we're outside of our comfort zone. Moving along, a Google Music service may be currently being tested by Google employees, and Amazon may be working on a similar digital locker, so you'd be able to upload your music collection to the cloud and stream it to your mobile device. I think that one of these two companies will probably succeed. Don't know which, but eventually one of them will. Would that be a good feature for you, Jerry? Would you upload your music to a digital locker so you could stream it out of there at any time?
I'm probably not the target market for that. My music library consists of like 10 tracks.
Well, I have a fairly extensive music library. I've just been meaning to organize it for the longest time. I keep trying, but I keep getting sidetracked on other projects like work and cleaning and trying to find a car. If anybody wants to tip me a car, I wouldn't complain. I'm not asking for one, but I am trying to replace my old piece of junk, and I've, for the first time in my life, delved into the wonderful world of dealing with car salesmen, which is can be horrible sometimes. Because every one of them
Yes.
wants to tell me his life story and how he is not really a used car salesman. He's new at it. I don't know that I didn't know there were so many new people in the car industry. Anyway, moving along, Microsoft is suing Barnes & Noble for not paying Android-related patent fees for the Nook Color. To quote, "Android uses natural ways of interacting with devices by tabbing through various screens to find the information they need. surfing the web more quickly, and interacting with documents and ebooks, all of which Microsoft claims it owns the rights to.
Yeah, well, they went after HTC a little while back for the same stuff and settled, so.
Well, it's easier to settle. The point is that it's essentially piracy. I'm not talking about the type of piracy we refer to when we talk about stealing things. I'm talking about somebody comes up to your door and essentially says, what you have in there looks nice, we want our piece of it.
Right?
Yes. Anyway, that's that. I don't think there's really much to say about it other than it, you know, Microsoft apparently has a patent on tabbing through screens to find information. I don't understand how you're able to patent stupid things like that. I think you should patent something that shows some sort of creativity.
Hey, you know, at one time, I mean, yeah, it's obvious now because it's been around for so long, but there was a time when it was not obvious.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is that if you look at it, tabs are a paradigm for file folders in a drawer. It's not a concept that you can say that we invested a lot of money. The implementation, certainly, yes, we did. But it's not something you could say that somebody invested, you know, millions of dollars figuring out what a tab was. Well, hopefully not. But although I'm sure there are people who do spend millions of dollars figuring out minutia like that.
Okay, so I have an answer on the BlackBerry thing.
Yes.
Okay, the question is, do I need a BlackBerry to make the most of the playbook? The answer is, in a word, yes. The first version will not have its own cellular connection, instead relying on Wi-Fi to access the internet for itself. Using a secure Bluetooth connection, the playbook will bridge with the BlackBerry to access corporate or consumer email, address book, calendar, and other features including BlackBerry Messenger. And here's the important part. When the link is broken, all that data is wiped.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
Basically, for the foreseeable future, the playbook only works if you have a BlackBerry. For
it
all
looks
of
like it'll work without it, but you lose a significant amount of functionality without a BlackBerry.
Yes, for all you lose all the features for which people like BlackBerries. I think that's the simplest way to describe it.
It's all right.
Okay,
I'm looking forward to the 10-inch HTC tablet.
I'm looking forward to hearing how that actually reminds me before I forget. This weekend, I am seriously, and I haven't changed my mind yet, considering attending the Northeast Linux Fest.
Ooh.
In Worcester, Massachusetts. If you happen to be anywhere near Worcester, you're welcome to stop by. They have a website, Northeast Linux Fest. I'll put it in the show notes, but that's not why I'm mentioning it. I am strongly considering going and taking only my phone and the Nook Color and seeing if I could spend an entire 24-hour period without a computer and just with the tablet and the phone as sort of a personal challenge to see how tablets work as your primary communications device. What do you think about this, Jerry?
What the heck?
I have rendered Jerry speechless.
No, I was just clicked on something and it confuzzled me. Okay. What are we talking about? That just totally wiped my mind.
I am thinking of taking only the Nook Color.
Oh, okay, going without a laptop.
Yes.
Is what you're saying.
This would be the first time I had taken a trip without bringing along at least the netbook. So do you think this is an interesting idea?
Have fun, dude. I'm not doing it.
Well, I want to see how it works for me, and it's only
What do you really need, right? At the most, you're going to need to SSH into something, for what you do.
By the way, I just invested in a Bluetooth keyboard that I've successfully paired with the Nook Color.
Okay, so even if one of your servers goes down, you'll need to hop into it and fix it, right?
Yeah, I really have to make sure that I have that SSH key loaded onto the Nook.
So a netbook doesn't really give you anything. Whereas for me, I need the CPU
yes.
for developing.
But you do
so
development on the
like
road.
To go.
You do development on the road. On the road, I don't do as much. I may do some writing in terms of blogging. I may maintain some server stuff. But mostly on the road, because wherever I'm going, I'm probably doing something, such as attending a conference and listening to Jared Wilson, who is the man who taught me all about Myth TV back in the day, is going to be one of the speakers.
Oh, that's cool.
He wrote
talked about that.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm excited. So I won't necessarily be doing much computing. So I figured a 24-hour period, it's the perfect time to see if I can handle being computerless but being tablet full.
I think you can do it. Especially with the Bluetooth keyboard.
Yeah, I think I can do it. I want to see if I'm happy with it. If I
I
can
think you will be.
If I can be content with that type of setup. But we'll see. I'm told the hotel has Wi-Fi, and so does the Nook. So we'll see what happens. Worst case scenario, I'll go to bed early. Anyway, moving along, there was a release candidate of Firefox Mobile, and there's a nice interview with the project manager that I linked to. And it's getting faster.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's getting faster.
Yeah.
And less bloated.
Okay. I do have Firefox, and I accidentally went to use it today. And, okay.
I think it's getting nicer. But
I have never really been a big Firefox fan.
Well, I just switched back to it because there were things that kept annoying me about Chrome. That continue
like,
to annoy me
what?
About Chrome. Memory usage.
Oh, okay. See, I'm rocking a system with like 12 gig of RAM, so.
Okay, mine only the computer that I use for productivity only has 4 gigabytes of RAM. I have other computers that, you know, the workhorses have more. But the workhorses don't have any screens, so doesn't
really. Do you ever listen to the stuff you say and think, how would this be interpreted if I had said it, you know, 10 years ago?
I do. My first,
like,
my first.
I only
stick
have
of,
4 gig of RAM.
My first stick of RAM was 1 megabyte and cost $80. First time I ever bought RAM.
See, the first time I bought RAM, it didn't come on a stick. It came on a chip that you had to plug into a socket and get all the pins to line up.
Which computer was that?
So, now we did that on the TRS-80, but I think it was a 286.
Okay.
The memory was in sockets.
The first PC I had, before that I had a Commodore for many years.
Mm-hmm.
The first IBM-compatible type PC was a Magnavox 386 SX16, which was one of the earliest computers that had the 72-pin RAM. Previously, they were using the 30-pin RAM.
Right.
So 1 megabyte was considered a luxurious amount of memory at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it was in a single chip, not a single slot chip. Instead of being in pairs. Now we do pairs again for dual channel, but it was a big thing that each chip didn't have to be paired up. So I had to mail order it. It was that luxurious 1 megabyte that cost me $80. I don't still have it, nor do I still have the 386 SX16 that was manufactured by Magnavox. But for years after that, I was still using Lotus Works 1.0 as my primary word processor.
Oh, yeah.
It worked on everything. It didn't matter how junky your old piece of junk was. A text-based word processor worked on everything.
Yep, yep. Sometimes I want to load up, you know, like DOS and like load up Windows 3.1 on my current system just to see how it works.
That would be interesting.
I don't think it would work at all.
It probably wouldn't. It would just be interesting to see if it did.
It would be like... I just have this, when I think about doing that, the thing that crosses my mind is Windows agoraphobic? Agoraphobic?
Agoraphobic.
Agoraphobic. You know, you load it onto the system, it looks around and goes, holy crap, look at all this space. There's space on the hard drive. There's space in RAM. What do I do with all this RAM? Ah!
Disable the page file.
Oh,
anyway, moving along.
Anyway, moving on.
Titanium Media Sync is a new program that was just recently released. It's about $3 in the market. And it's by the same people who did Titanium Backup. Have you ever used Titanium Backup, Jerry? It's a very popular program for backing up your Android installation.
Nope.
It backs up the applications and their data so that if you wipe your system, you can very quickly restore from your SD card.
And that's how you save your Angry Birds saved games.
Yes. Now, this new program that the developer came out with allows you to sync a set of folders from your Android device to cloud storage.
Like Dropbox.
Well, it currently supports Dropbox. I gathered that the developer intends to put different back-end support on it. The thing is that it's designed, unlike the Dropbox client, to be battery-friendly, and it offers a continuous sync and a one-shot. So the idea being that it very intelligently manages the sync.
You know,
Dropbox on the computer supports continuously syncing a directory, but the Dropbox app only supports uploading into the Dropbox, or it supports downloading from the Dropbox. It doesn't support a continuous sync.
But you know what I found out? You know, you recently converted me to Dropbox.
Yes.
And
thanks for that 300 megabytes, by the way.
And thank you for that 300. I only got 250.
I thought it's 250. I don't recall whatever it was.
But you know, when you're syncing up with Dropbox, if you have two computers on the same LAN, then the two computers sync up directly.
Yeah, that's right? That's actually a newer feature. It wasn't originally that way. It was a feature they released last year.
LAN aware, I think they call it.
LAN sync, I think.
Did you know that the Android Dropbox client is also LAN aware and can do LAN sync? Well, not it's. I guess it's not sync, but I told it to download or grab a movie file off the Dropbox and put it on the SD card, and it was downloading it at, you know, wireless LAN speeds, not going over my internet. I was very pleased with that.
And I think it's a good feature.
It is.
Remind me to find out why it never works properly for me. I must have the firewall set in the wrong way.
I think it's because you're on Linux.
No, it supports that feature. I think I must have something set incorrectly. But generally, it takes much longer, and it shouldn't. I've been meaning to look into it. But Titanium Media Sync is actually, you know, I paid the money. I think it's a very good idea, where if you want to, let's say, back up your camera folder, it will do that to the Dropbox automatically, and it will offer it will essentially allow you to configure it in a battery-friendly manner.
Oh, absolutely, because you never know when you're going to drop your phone and just trash everything.
Yeah, and I use my mother as an example regularly, because I consider my mother to be the quintessential average user,
mm-hmm.
and she's not offended that I refer to her as average. Sometimes, in some of her skills, it's a compliment in terms of technology. But basically, you know, she came to me when she was visiting recently, and she's back in Florida where she's nice and warm, and I'm not. But she was saying, I'm concerned because I put all these pictures on my phone and take all my pictures there. You know, what happens if I lose the phone? So I took the phone away from her. I plugged it into the USB port of my computer, and I backed up her pictures, which was much better than what she wanted to do, which is she wanted to have Costco burn her a CD. I said, I can burn you a CD, and it won't cost $3.
And probably be quicker.
Yes. But so she took the CD to Costco and printed the pictures. But that's a whole other story. But basically, I think this is a great idea for a program, and I've only just started using it, and I'm going to see how it works in the long term. But I think having that fine-grained control is actually a very good idea, and I happen to like the developer from Titanium Backup, where the Titanium Backup app also supports syncing to Dropbox. So you can program it to periodically sync your backup up to Dropbox. Something I'd suggest you do in the middle of the night when you're on a Wi-Fi network, but... But so my application settings for Android are actually routinely and regularly synced up to Dropbox in addition to being backed up to the card.
I wonder if it's smart enough to realize not to restore that stuff if it's on a different machine.
Well, you can set different target locations. So you could say that one directory is, let's say, the Droid directory, and the other one is the Nook Color directory.
Okay. Because I remember you said you had a similar problem when you were with the Amazon App Store.
Well, there are two things I had problems with. One is the Google Restore itself. When you go and you log on, you have a completely pristine Android device, and then you go on and log in, it starts trying to restore your apps. But it tries to restore some apps that you've uninstalled previously.
Right.
So it, you know, it's trying to restore dozens of apps at a time.
I don't know how your phone does it, but... The phone is nice and responsive while it's doing the download, but when it gets to that install, the phone freezes for a few seconds.
Yeah, I have the same problem, but with the Amazon store, it recognizes I have multiple devices, it does not allow per device installations in the Android version. And I haven't checked, there was an update to the Amazon Market app. I don't know if it's fixed this. But it keeps trying to install. I did a search when I first installed the Amazon Market for tablet-based apps, because I have a tablet. But a lot of the stuff on the Android Market by Google, the tablet stuff is filtered out because it doesn't see the Nook as a tablet. So I can't get, for example, USA Today for tablets. I get USA Today for phones, which is not necessarily bad. It's just...
Not what you...
I'd like the optimized version for the 7-inch screen or for the larger screens. So I did a search for the word tablet, and I came up with an application, Tekka for Tablets, Tekka is a gadget site.
Right.
So I decided I'd give it a shot. But it keeps trying to install it onto the Droid, and the Droid is indisputably not a tablet. So I'm not sure if they have the same device profile settings that the Google Android market has. Although I have been enjoying the occasional free app from Amazon. Nothing really good has come out, but they had SwiftKey the other day. But I already own SwiftKey in the Google market, so I figured there was no point in taking advantage of the free version while it was free. If they're offering the SwiftKey tablet version, I'd be on it in a minute.
Ah, that would be cool.
Because I've already paid for one tablet keyboard, but I would pay for SwiftKey, the tablet version. It's currently in beta, from what I hear. But I think you should check out Titanium Media Sync. I think it's a valuable addition to your arsenal of Android tools. And I'm looking for it. Again, it was just released, so it only supports one thing. I'm hoping the developer supports custom targets, not just Dropbox, but let's say your own server. So let's say I had some extra space on the Android Buffet server and I wanted to sync my folders there over SSH. Anyway,
good luck.
Moving along, the Field and Stream application was released. So if you are a fan of fields and streams, why not check it out?
Is this really, I mean, I don't know. It just seems, is that a target audience for the Android market? Really?
Are you saying that there isn't anybody who takes their Android out while fishing? Or people who don't while they're, I don't read Field and Stream. Is there hunting in there?
I don't know.
Okay. Either way, if you read Field and Stream, you might like the Field and Stream application. If you are like, obviously, Jerry and myself, you don't read Field and Stream. So don't worry about it. Okay. Moving along. Adobe Air was updated. Now supports Honeycomb. Yay.
Yep. Yay.
QuickOffice Pro was updated to 4.0, and it's $7.99 for a limited time. So if you need a complete office solution, and you don't want to pay $20 or $15 for the competition, you can get this for $8. And this is a question I was going to ask you, Jerry. Mm-hmm. Now, I looked at this while I was coming up with this list of possibly interesting stories, and I asked myself, if I have a Bluetooth keyboard and a little tablet, should I have a word processing program for my Android device?
Only if you want to do word processing.
Well, at some point I might want to. But basically, I looked, and so far the real thing I would really want is sync with Google Docs. And QuickOffice offers a very limited version. Apparently, DataViz, which Documents to Go,
right,
offers a better sync to Google. But so far, I haven't found anything that says that it isn't trying to have me locally save a Word document and edit it on the phone. That it's trying to. It's a complete solution for Google Docs. Anyway, yeah. If anybody has any opinions on Android-based word processing, I'd love to hear them.
Sorry, dude. No opinion.
Okay. You're not the only one listening, Jerry. I hope not.
Thank goodness.
Yes. Otherwise, we'd just be two guys talking. We are two guys talking. But we'd be two guys talking with no one else listening.
Which would mean we could work for the NSA.
Okay. Well, I have a friend. I'm looking forward to it. Tomorrow, I'm going to have lunch with a friend of mine. And my friend just came back from a few days training at the CIA.
No.
Oh, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, they're going to tell me all about it. I can never remember where the CIA is. I think it's in Hyde Park, somewhere near Poughkeepsie.
CIA, that's Langley.
No, you're thinking of a different CIA.
Okay, so what CIA are you talking about?
The Culinary Institute of America. What time are you talking about?
Ah, yuck, 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 yuck. You got me.
I did?
You did. I was thinking Central Intelligence Agency.
What do they cook?
You a funny man.
Am I?
Sometimes.
Well, I like cooking. I don't get to do it that often, but I enjoy cooking, so I'm eager to hear what my friend learned at their few days course at the CIA.
Cool.
And that brings us to Developer's Corner. I found you a few stories for today.
Let's skip it. Just because we are already running so long.
Okay, I will just mention one of them. In-app billing in the Android market is ready. So you can now buy things in your app. That's it.
Excellent. I do have a request from our developer listener.
Okay.
If you have developed an app and put it on the Google Marketplace and the Amazon App Store, I would be interested in hearing how you handle your build process.
Okay. And if you'd like to contribute, you can certainly do so, and we are always eager to get people on if we get the chance to talk about things. So we'll see what we can do. And just remember, we will try to stay more on topic once we have an entirely different show where we can stray off topic on.
No, we won't.
We probably won't, no.
No.
You're right, but at least we'll have a place where we can say this is this piece can be a...
And now you'll hear an excerpt from Flying Bathtubs.
Yes. So the shows will remain very closely linked.
And we're not, what are we going to talk about? Just whatever?
Well, we'll figure out something.
It's going to be me and you just chatting.
Well, we have a lot of possible topics. I wanted to talk about streaming media at some point. I don't know if you have an opinion on that.
I have an opinion on that. I certainly have. Oh my gosh, do I have an opinion on that? Have I told you how much Amazon online, their streaming service, friggin' rocks?
I agree with you. In fact, I will recommend a movie if you are extremely bored and want to learn about a occasionally less than fascinating topic. There is a documentary available for free on Prime called Helvetica, which is if you ever thought that you couldn't spend an hour and a half to 2 hours listening to people talk about a typeface, you'd be wrong. Because somebody actually did make a documentary where they spend an hour and a half to 2 hours talking simply about a typeface.
Would you be disappointed or impressed if I told you that I've already watched it?
I don't know. I'm trying to decide.
It was actually,
it was very interesting, but
it was extremely interesting.
It's just a surprisingly, it's a surprising topic for a documentary.
It is.
Yes. But I like the price, and I sometimes put things on while I'm doing something else, as background information to feed my intellect as I do something mind-numbingly boring, like cleaning my living room, which I've been doing for weeks now. And I can certainly talk about my surround sound and my inability to figure out exactly how to calibrate surround sound. Although for the first time I actually hear surround sound, which is an improvement. I've never been able to hear it before.
The only place I have surround sound in my house is in my office.
I have it in my living room, which is sort of my office. It's, that's where I record the show. It's where I should spend more time, but I'm not here as much, but it's... My living room serves many purposes. I live in a one-bedroom. There's only one of me, so I don't need any more. So I have two rooms, not counting the kitchen area, and I have surround sound in my living room. And if the people who live upstairs don't complain too much, I can turn the subwoofer on.
The sub what?
The subwoofer. What do you call it?
Subwoofer.
Yes. What did I say?
Subwoofer. A woofer. Oh. It's late. I'm a little giddy.
He's making fun of my New York accent.
It's a woofer.
Okay.
That's cool.
Anyway.
I'm glad you like your woofer.
Well, I'm thinking of replacing my subwoofer with a different woofer. But that's a topic for another day. But I did order a calibration DVD, which is the first time I've ever ordered one of those.
DVD or a Blu-ray?
I think it was a calibration Blu-ray, actually. I think it had both in the package. You get both the DVD.
Because, that would be kind of silly.
Well, a lot of these things, they're selling you both the DVD and the Blu-ray.
Right, but if you have an HD, then why would you calibrate it with a DVD?
Yep. Either way, I believe it is a Blu-ray, and what I wanted was something that was supposed to test the surround sound so I could really hear.
Right.
Hear.
Just start up any movie with the THX thing on it.
I have to find out if I have a movie with the THX. Either way, I wanted a calibration thing so that I could say that I have some sense of what it's supposed to look like.
Right.
Because I obviously have no taste.
Right, I don't either. My TV is way too bright.
Yeah, well, I'd like to see if I can get it into the experience that everybody tells me is so wonderful. Because when it comes to high definition and surround sound, I must be a Philistine.
Who to what?
Philistine.
And who is that?
How about, let's try different. I am uncouth, unsophisticated.
Oh, that's okay. So am I.
Yes. So I'm going to try to get better on that. And perhaps we'll talk about that on Flying Bathtubs. Yes. I have to put up that website. Anyway, let's...
Don't forget the logo. You know what it reminds me of?
Yes.
Do you remember the Flying Toaster screensaver?
Yes, I do.
That's what it reminds me of.
Okay, if anybody wants to draw us a flying bathtub, we will, of course, give you attribution. And a cut of any t-shirt sales.
That would be cool.
We don't sell t-shirts, do we?
I think we should. I would love to have an Android Buffet t-shirt.
I'll see what I can do. Maybe Cafe Press. It wouldn't cost us anything.
Nope. I think that's an excellent idea.
Okay. I wish I had more artistic
Especially,
vision.
I think the flying bathtub would be cooler, though.
Okay, if anybody would like to get involved, then we will give you a
Well,
cut.
if you want to get involved with anything, just let us know. We're
We love involvement.
chomping at the bit for
We love
for some
involvement.
feedback.
We love involvement.
We love involvement.
Yes, and we're gonna leave it at that. I'll cut a little out of this episode so it doesn't take as long. But remember that whole, this has been a Flying Bathtubs Android Buffet squirrel filled episode. And we'll see you next week.
Bye, folks.
Goodbye.